This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I would like to give them at least 5 innings of defense. Yeah. 4 or 5 innings of defense. I think that would be a good first day. Hopefully, it's a nice sunny day. And we get a good first look out there in left.
That was Joe Espada, and who is he talking about there? He's talking about Jose Altuve, who is going to get 4 to 5 innings in left field on Friday.
Friday.
Not today, not tomorrow.
Will we be at that game, Sean?
We will be at that game.
All right, nice.
We will be at that game. Altuve.
Yeah, let's razz him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, either we need to be in left field. We need to be near him either to razz him and toughen him up a little bit.
Yeah, he needs to be toughened up.
Or because he doesn't hear it every stadium
sure.
he goes to.
He's been booed by 55,000 people at Yankee Stadium, but he's never heard the likes of us.
Oh,
we got to toughen that kid up.
We're going to tell short jokes out there. We're going to make it personal.
Yeah.
I'm sure none of the Yankee fans do that with him.
Oh, that's it. Okay, imagine. Remember when – I can't remember which player it was that was talking about how – because he wasn't here in 2017 through 19, but he had pointed out like – you go to all these ballparks and you hear the same same insults over
same
and over again about garbage cans and everything.
Yeah.
And it always becomes funny how unoriginal all of them are.
Yeah.
So Altuve's had to deal with both the unoriginality of those jokes, but then also the unoriginality of anything you say about a short person.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing you can say, there's no short insult you can come up with that hasn't been done a million times.
No, you're
already.
Right. We're gonna need really good material on Friday.
That's fine. We have to take tomorrow's show off so we can write. We'll have a writing session.
A brainstorming session? Yes, yes.
We'll go into the Everglades and sit in a hut.
I'll let you do that. With the iguanas. So that was Joe Espada. 4 to 5 innings for Altuve in left field on Friday. We will be there for that one here in West Palm Beach. Espada said he thinks that Altuve is ready for left field.
I think he's in a good spot. I think he's ready for it. We're all looking forward to it. I know he is. But I think we have done our work preparing him for this next step.
Yeah, everything we've heard about Jose Altuve in left field is... he's having the time of his life.
He's loving it. He's embraced the challenge.
Yeah.
So he's not doing it grudgingly.
This is a headline of a Chandler Rome article today.
Okay.
You ready? And it's got a picture of Jose Altuve playing left field.
Right before the ball hits him in the forehead.
Yeah, I don't know. That stance right there doesn't look like someone who's super comfortable playing left field. I don't know.
I like it. Well, it looks like he's running. He's tracking the ball.
I guess. The arms.
Because he's not set up. So he's got his glove hand up. And the right hand back. So it means
balancing a little bit. Maybe?
No, he's running for the ball, which means he's tracking it before he catches it.
Oh, gotcha.
Instead of just being planted and waiting for it.
Okay,
that's a good sign,
okay.
Sean.
Well,
now I need to know how long until the ball got there, because I don't want him being the guy that's running with his arm outstretched
and that...
before like kids do in Little League, where they're running across the field with their arm outstretched
with the glove up, as soon as it leaves the bat.
Yeah.
That, and that tells you. where I am right now with Altuve playing left field, the skepticism level.
Yeah, that's why you don't like that picture.
That's why
it looks like he's running with his arm outstretched.
Well, that's how I'm filling in the rest of what's happening before and after this picture right here. This still shot is that the ball is still a good 5 seconds away from getting near him, and he's got his glove up, and he's so. Anyways, the headline of this article by Chandler Rome: a look inside Jose Altuve's left field learning curve. He's like a kid in a candy store.
Because what? Because he's short. Nice, Chandler.
Oh,
I mean, what did we just tell you about the short jokes?
Yeah.
My God.
Oh, next to toy
store. He's like
store,
a kid in a candy store who can't reach the M&Ms.
That's right.
Great.
That's how
great,
I read that.
Great, Chandler.
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
My God.
All
have
right.
some class.
Hey, guess who's on the hotline right now? The great Adam Spillane.
Oh, I thought it was Altuve.
No.
I was like, I'd have to explain to him that I was like making fun of somebody who would make short jokes.
And then
I wasn't making the short joke.
And then he would say, what?
It's okay.
Come again? Yes,
what was that again?
Yeah.
There you go.
Nothing,
Jose. Yeah, just citing this headline here. Adam Spillane is on the hotline. He covers our Astros. He's out there every morning getting sound from Joe Espada, talking to the fellas in the clubhouse. Spo, how are you?
I'm good. How are y'all?
We're doing good, man. So it doesn't sound like we're going to get Altuve in left field till Friday. We played some of the Espada clips, but you're there. You can kind of see the look on the face, the energy about Altuve playing left field, and you've been in that clubhouse. What's your sense right now on Altuve playing left field, and the either optimism or pessimism about it amongst people, specifically Espada and people like that in the clubhouse?
Well, there's a lot of optimism about it just because of how he's looked so far. But I will say, I was talking to Chaz McCormick about this this morning. It looks weird out there. You know, you guys have seen Altuve play now for 15 years, and McCormick has played with him, for 3 or 4 years at this point. And it just looks strange when you look over in left field and there's Jose Altuve. But he has looked good. You know, he's been able to check the boxes of, like, the easy things. But I do think one of the things, and this is what, you know, Friday is going to be about, and he'll play the first 4 or 5 innings of that game on Friday. But there are some things that you can't simulate during outfield drills. You can't simulate a broken bat. You can't really simulate a ball getting hit off the end of the bat. You can't really simulate a jam shot. It's hard to simulate, you know, spin with the ball slicing away from you. So as good as Altuve has looked so far, as good as everybody says Altuve has looked so far, you're not really going to know how this looks until you see him in a game situation and see how he reacts when the ball is, you know, hit a little funky to him.
You know, and then the other thing that people bring up, myself included, is, okay, he doesn't have the greatest arm strength. I mean, amongst infielders last year, he had one of the weakest arms in baseball. I'm not overly concerned about it, but I don't want to act like it's nothing. What do you feel about his arm strength out there and how it might be a hindrance or how it might not be as big a deal?
Well, I asked Dana Brown that exact question, I guess it was earlier this month. And the one thing he said is that just the throw from the infield is so different from the throw in the outfield. You know, when you're an infielder, you're throwing flat-footed. You know, you don't have a whole lot of momentum behind the throw when you're throwing from the infield. When you're throwing from the outfield, you have the crow hop. And so that allows you to maybe mask some of the issues that you might have with your arm strength. Also, you have to be a lot more accurate with your throws when you're playing in the infield as opposed to the outfield. You've got a little bigger window to make that throw. So I think they think that his arm will translate fine in the outfield. Again, we have to see it to believe it, but it's not like you can survive in the outfield with a weak throwing arm. I mean, especially in left field. It's not like they're asking him to play right field. It's not like they're asking him to play center field. I'm sure that teams will test him early on, and, you know, that's just part of this whole thing. That's just the experiment that they're working with sticking him in left field after all the years of second base.
Do you think if somebody tests him early on and he guns him down at 30, does the Bo Jackson finger
gun? Oh,
guns?
Yeah.
Do we get a finger gun out of Altuve?
Yeah.
I don't think we'll get a finger gun out of Altuve, but I think that the dugout would absolutely erupt if happens,
yeah.
Especially if it happens like early on. But I'm sure, you know, I don't know if it'll happen during spring training just because, you know, teams are going to be a little bit more careful running the bases. But in the regular season, I don't think teams will hesitate to challenge him and just see if he can make that throw and just, you know, force him to have to make that throw. And I think that they understand what the weaknesses are with this. They understand the areas where this can go wrong, but they feel like it's worth the shot.
That'd be great if teams were just routinely tagging up from first base, like pop flies to short left field, test him out.
You know, the only other thing I wonder and worry about a little bit is, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, Adam, but every now and then Jose Altuve kind of loses track of where he is on the base paths as a runner.
Oh, yeah.
You're in the outfield. You got a lot of stuff to keep track of where to go with the baseball.
You worry?
Should I be concerned about that at all?
Like losing track of outs?
Yeah.
Or like which base to throw to.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. Because he loses track of it when he's the actual base runner.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about him in left field.
Good point, Seth.
I don't think that he'll have issues, you know, throwing to the right bases, because you do have help with that. You have infielders directing you where to throw the ball most of the time. Forgetting how many outs there are, that could be something that comes up. Remember, this was something that Christian Walker said yesterday. It's like, you know, one of the biggest challenges of spring training is staying focused and maintaining your focus for a whole game. So, he's going to have to do that. It gets boring in the outfield. That's something that Dana Brown said when this whole process started, is that Dana Brown was an outfielder, and he admitted you can get bored playing out there. So, yeah, that could be something that comes up again. It's all very, very new. A lot of bad things can happen when you're trying something new, especially for the first time. But, again, they think it's worth a shot.
Another reason to sit out in left field on Friday, Seth. Yeah. Altuve might toss out number two into the crowd to us thinking it's out number three.
That's true. You know? Yeah, we need to really
make it a ball out of it.
Balls in play. Balls in play.
Yeah, no heroes. Hey, take it back. Hey, we're talking to Adam Spillane, our Astros reporter. He's live here with us in West Palm Beach. He's just leaving the ballpark right now after media stuff this morning. We'll be out there at the game between the Nationals and the Astros today. So, Spo, we get our first look at Brendan Rodgers as an Astro today. How up for grabs? A lot of people talking about the outfield, and there's the outfield needs to get shored up. How up for grabs is that second base spot right now?
I don't know if it's necessarily that every day the starting second base spot necessarily is up for grabs. I think that's probably going to be Mauricio Dubon on opening day. But there's probably at least one reserve infield spot that's open. And I think that you've got three guys that are really vying for it. With Zach Short, who's going to start at shortstop today, Luis Guillorme, who we saw at shortstop yesterday, and he'll play third base today, and then Rodgers. I think that Rodgers probably has the higher ceiling of those three, but we'll have to kind of wait and see just how that looks. I mean, he's got a lot of talent, a guy who was picked third overall 10 years ago, won a gold glove back in 2022, had a really good year in 2022. And then the Rockies kind of gave up on him, and he's a guy who has come into camp pretty motivated. He's a guy who he's got something to prove. He wasn't just talking to him the other day. He wasn't real happy with how things ended up in Colorado, and I'm sure he felt like that team gave up on him. And so this is obviously an opportunity here for him to prove himself. This is his first game today. Zach Short's been around for a little bit. He was with AJ Hinch in Detroit for a few years. And then you have Guillorme, who's probably the most veteran of that mix and probably has the higher floor of those guys. And as you can see today, he can play more positions, which makes him valuable just to be able to play, you know, those three, you know, all three of those positions at a high level, I think makes him pretty valuable to them. So we have talked a lot about the outfield, mostly because the starters haven't looked very good. But the infield, I do think there are some openings there for some guys who maybe make the club, not necessarily as a starter, but can come off the bench and do some things for you.
Adam, Sean and I, at the very beginning of the show today said we're going to be careful not to overreact about Cam Smith's promising performance yesterday. Since then, we have named him Rookie of the Year at least five times.
Yes.
So
not an overreaction.
Yeah, what's a – realistically, on a scale of 1 to 10 – how much should I think about, okay, Cam Smith is going to play in the major leagues this year? How excited could I actually get about that?
I would say you should temper your expectations, temper your excitement for that.
Yeah.
I don't think that there'll be in any sort of a rush to bring him up to the big leagues. I'll be curious to see like where they start him. You know, do they start him in Double-A? Do they start him in Triple-A? Because you're probably better off just starting him in Double-A, because if he does get hot to start the season, then you're going to have all the fans clamoring to have him brought up to the big leagues when, frankly, he's not supposed to be ready. to play in the big leagues at this point. This is a guy who was playing college baseball a year, you know, this time a year ago. It's his first spring training. He has really impressed, though, and the expectations were high for him when they got him. They were high for him when he arrived in camp, and I do think that he's probably exceeded those. You know, he's exceeded what they thought that he would do so far. But again, it's four plate appearances in spring training, and there's a graveyard full of guys who have done great for those first four spring plate appearances, and then kind of fallen back a little bit. But so far, he's off to as good a start as you could ever imagine having. Not just what he's done in the games, but just like what he's done in group workouts.
What are you most looking forward to seeing today in the game with the Nationals? Fromber on the hill to start the game. You've probably seen the list. We have not. I know they have the list of guys who could potentially be pitching today out of the bullpen. Do you have anything in particular you got circled that you're most looking forward to seeing today, Spo?
Yeah, so Fromber, obviously, I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, intrigued to see him. You kind of know what you're getting from Fromber at this point of his career. One of the guys who is scheduled to come out of the bullpen today is Logan Van Wy, who was an undrafted free agent a couple of years ago who has really flown through their system. He was a Division II pitcher who wound up closing games last year in Sugarland. And when they traded Ryan Pressly, Logan Van Wy was a guy that Dana Brown specifically mentioned as somebody who could win a bullpen role coming out of spring training. So that's somebody who is kind of interesting at this point, just because when the GM mentions him by name, that's your ears kind of perk up, especially if he's not somebody that you're overly familiar with. So Logan Van Wy is one guy that I'm looking at today. And then the other is just the infielders, the three infielders who are making their the three infielders kind of vying for those bench roles with Rogers, Short, and Guillorme. Just see how those guys look.
It's Adam Spillane. He covers the Astros for us here on Sports Radio 610. He's in West Palm Beach with us. Spo, we'll see you back here at the house. And looking forward to heading out to the game later on today, man.
All right, sounds good, guys.
All right, thanks for checking in. Adam Spillane, good stuff.
Did you hear the birds in the background?
Over at the yard. Yeah, it sounds pleasant.
Yeah, it was nice. It was like, we were listening to the Masters
or
something.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. All right, so that's Adam Spillane. We are live in West Palm Beach, brought to you by Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Up next, we'll circle back to what we originally teased into that segment until we got Spo on the phone, which was the Combine. D'Amico Ryans was asked about three specific players, their evaluation, what the Combine meant to that. Three pretty prominent players, including maybe the most prominent player for the Houston Texans. We'll get to that and a whole lot more coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
D'Amico Ryans was asked yesterday at the Combine at his media session on what the evaluation and drafting of C.J. Stroud, the role the Combine played in evaluating and drafting C.J. Stroud, that whole process back in 2023. Here's what the Texans head coach had to say.
For me, taking over this franchise, I know, right, every team that's here, right? If you want to win games and you want to be, if you want to have a run deep in the playoffs, you have to have a quarterback to do that, right? And that was the main focus for us, so it was easy in the evaluation process of getting CJ, just seeing his talent, seeing the type of guy that he was, like ultimate competitor, true leader. His teammates loved him, like he cared about his teammates. And that's what stuck out for me, is the type, not only getting a quarterback, but getting a guy who the locker room can get behind. Guys that they feel his passion, they feel his love for the game. He's competitive. He has the leadership and drive to be great. And that's what led us to getting CJ, and CJ's done an outstanding job for us these past 2 years.
I wonder how much things like the Combine and in the 30 visits and really just throughout the whole evaluation process for the draft, having the quarterback in place already frees you up. We know that a quarterback is disproportionately important as an individual to a football team than other players are.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. Is the evaluation disproportionate as well? Like the time spent, the energy spent on it, you know, the vetting of it.
It's one of those things, almost it's like anything that causes stress in your life. It's almost impossible to quantify how much energy it takes because it permeates everything else.
Yeah.
And it's hard to focus. It's hard to concentrate.
Right.
It's hard to make the right decisions. One of the old sayings in football is that need is a horrible judge of character, or judge of evaluator. Need is a horrible evaluator. It's a man, as soon as you really need something or want something, it just everything gets skewed. And it does. It affects all of your other decisions.
Yeah.
So, it's probably I don't know if relaxing is the right word, but it removes a lot of the stress.
I mean, the teams that are operating this week with the quarterback already in place are probably able to do things so much more freely, and especially the teams that are at the top of the draft who are trying to determine whether or not to take a quarterback.
Yeah.
It's one thing, like the Texans were in a draft where it was pretty obvious they needed to take a quarterback. But I can't imagine being like the Titans and the Browns and things like that. You've got this whole evaluation. You're evaluating guys that might be the face of your franchise with that pick.
Yeah.
But then you're evaluating guys who might just be good football players with you for that pick. It's a strange spot to be in.
The downside of choosing the wrong quarterback is just so big because unless you've got an incredibly good defense, you pick the wrong quarterback, and all of a sudden, all the other money you're spending is wasted money.
Why are we spending money on running backs to win four games?
Right. Yeah, like you're buying birthday candles for a cake that doesn't exist or something.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. So it's nice to have that. And I don't think there's anybody that has any doubts about CJ's potential
in
the long term. Now it is all very much about, now the pressure is, all right, look, we got the right guy. Don't screw this up.
Yep.
The Colts have been in the team that have had everything right except for the quarterback.
Yeah.
And they might as well have just not spent two-thirds of their payroll over the course of the last decade.
Like the last 7 years on fire.
Yeah, because they can't find the right quarterback.
That's right.
They've done a lot of things really, really well, but they're really dumb when it comes to finding quarterbacks.
Yeah. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the evaluation and drafting last year of Kamari Lassiter.
Going back and thinking about Kamari and Kalen, when I think about both of those guys, what stuck out to me about Kamari was what his teammates said about him last year, this being here at the combine. Like his attention to detail, his intensity in walkthroughs, just his mindset and how he loves football, that stood out to me. And that definitely came true throughout the season, watching Kamari play, watching how physical he was, watching the plays he made, watching how locked in he was each and every snap. Kamari felt like a pro the day he stepped into our building, and he's been a true pro all throughout his first year, still with a lot of improvements ahead of him, but love picking him up, and he's been a great addition to our team.
I think the two things about Kamari and then CJ, who D'Amico talked about earlier, the one thing he mentioned with CJ was how much his teammates loved him at Ohio State, and I think that's one of those things when you're evaluating the character of a guy. Look, lots of guys can do a pretty good job faking it in a 15-minute meeting. When you talk to teammates, when you talk to coaches, when you talk to equipment staff members of a guy's college, you start to get a real good feel for, all right, what are people actually saying about this guy?
Yeah.
Do I have to read between the lines, or do they just genuinely love this guy? I think with CJ, it was pretty apparent. I think with Kamari Lassiter, it's the same thing where, for one, he wanted to sit out of his bowl game because he got advice that's what he should do, that was the smart thing to do because you're about to make a bunch of money as a pro, and he couldn't help himself. He just had to play. He couldn't abandon those guys.
Yeah.
And when the way Kirby Smart talks about him, and I'm guessing other guys talked about Kamari Lassiter,
yep,
it's the meeting with those guys is almost probably just a stamp of confirmation on everything else they've heard. But I think that D'Amico does a really good job of, and I think he's doing an increasingly good job of being on the same page with Nick with, like, what does football character look like?
Yeah.
It's not, football character is different than Eagle Scout stuff. It's different than just showing up on time and working hard in the weight room. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And I think those two are starting to get a good feel for what they actually want and the type of guy.
Hey, Ben, let's skip down. Let's get to the some of the things that D'Amico had to say about the offensive line. This is D'Amico Ryans talking about the goal needs to be to protect C.J. Stroud better.
Yeah, getting better protection for C.J. is definitely a main thing, main point of emphasis for us. Right? We know, when C.J. is protected, he has a clean pocket. Right? He's a pretty good quarterback. And I constantly show guys clips in our meeting after a game of plays when we protect well and we have a good pocket. I'll show guys explosive, outstanding throws CJ is able to make in the middle of the field, along the sideline. Like, he's capable of making any throw on the football field, but it's just a matter of protecting him and giving him that comfort when he's in the pocket. When we do that, we can move the ball, we can make plays. So that is a point of emphasis for us of making sure he is protected better.
I like the I know he doesn't present it this way, but I do like the idea of just like them, him showing them those shots of CJ and being like, you guys are squandering this.
Yeah.
You guys are squandering a national treasure.
If you could protect him for maybe like 8 more of these a game.
Yeah, this is like I'm yelling at a child, my teenage boy, because he wants to have a gun, but he won't clean his gun. Clean that gun.
Yeah.
Got you a nice gun.
Yes, yes.
And you're sitting there, you're letting CJ rust out in the rain.
Yep.
I'm supposed to trust you with my weapons?
A lot of these answers, and especially yesterday, like D'Amico was very, I thought, poignant in his thoughts on the offensive line. Like, he was asked about, what are you looking for in offensive line? He said, we need guys who can protect. Like, protecting CJ has become a big thing, as it should have been back in week 7, 8, and 9, when they were kind of whistling past the graveyard a little bit. Well, it's fixable, and it's, you know.
We'll let Kenyon Green, let's give him one more shot in the Jets game to see if Kenyon can start.
It's almost like D'Amico and the staff are finally, like, seeing what we were all seeing.
Hey,
like, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hey, like, did you guys notice CJ's getting hit a lot?
CJ's getting his ass kicked. Yeah. Now, this was interesting yesterday.
Hey, tell me if I'm crazy here.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm crazy, but just it feels like CJ's gotten hit a lot this year. Am I crazy?
Am I nuts? Yeah. This was interesting. I listened to this yesterday. This was the first segment of the drive with Sterner and Hughley. And I want you to take a listen to what Clint had to say about how the team is handling CJ Stroud. And you, Seth, and you, the audience, and I'm curious if people agree with Clint's assessment of how he's being handled and how he needs to be handled moving forward.
Is it coddling, or is it this is the way that quarterbacks are handled in this day and age?
To me, it's less about D'Amico or Nick or anybody in particular, like in one particular instance, coddling CJ Stroud. I just think for me, it's at a point where, like, man, look, it's time for CJ to become a big boy and be treated like a big boy and take this team, this bull by the horns, and let's move on. I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of, and yeah, I think coddling is a perfect word for what has gone on with CJ Stroud. And look, I think there's some of that when you're young is necessary. I've said before, I'm on record, I love the way that D'Amico immediately gave him the job. Didn't I know they had some little competition with him and Davis Mills or whatever for a couple of weeks. I didn't like that. But I love the fact that D'Amico put his arm around him and stands him up right there in a team huddle and calls him up after the game and has him and is establishing, this is our guy, this is our league. I love all that stuff. But at some point in time, you know, it's gotta be, hey, the O-line struggled. Hey, we had some problems at the receiver position. Hey, our quarterback didn't play well at times.
We don't like that.
Don't feel like you get that.
Hey, you know what? We gotta play a little cleaner. We gotta get the football out. We gotta do some things to help ourselves as well, you know? So I don't know. I just it's less about what somebody says or didn't say and more about, hey, it's time. It's time. At some point, you graduate to, hey, I'm that dude. Give me control of the offense. Let me run the damn show. If I play poorly, get up there and say I play poorly. If I play great, they don't need to say anything. Let's keep it moving. The next step, folks, is for CJ Stroud to be that calming force when somebody gets injured. So you don't waste a series. So you don't have two delay of games in a drive, right? That's the next step for him. Or if you want to look at it from a season standpoint, when the mess hits the fan, and the O-line can't protect the quarterback, maybe you and the OC ain't seeing eye to eye and there's some frustration, whatever, right? In those moments, somebody on the offensive side of the football has to be the rock.
Okay.
I guess
and I think a little bit what he was referring to at the end, and I listened to the whole segment.
Yeah.
The optics of how CJ handled the Tank Dell injury factor big into Clint's assessment.
Right. No, and I guess that's where I wonder, though, too, because, I mean, coddled is kind of a loaded phrase. It's kind of like calling somebody soft on defense or something. I'm trying to think about how they should have handled or could handle CJ differently, especially because I don't – like, CJ's not like a Kyler Murray – or some other young quarterback where there's questions about how hard he's going to work or how much he cares or how willing he is to commit. He's certainly not – like Johnny Manziel would be the worst-case example of a guy that just flat out didn't put any time in. Like CJ's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if – I guess I don't – like it's a – does it need to be that CJ needs to get called out in a press conference or something? Because they don't typically
– they don't do that.
Yeah, and I played for Tom Coughlin, who was the toughest dude I've ever – played for and in my entire life in any sport, he had a very firm policy about not criticizing his own players in press conferences. He just didn't do it. Nobody accused of him of not being tough. So, like, I don't know exactly, like, where I see necessarily they've mollycoddled C.J. Stroud. Because what are you supposed to do, bench him? Is that, I mean, was there an instance this year it was going to be better to put Davis Mills in? I don't know.
Right. Well, and
I agree with what Clint's saying. There's a certain level of stoicism CJ needs to have in situations like with Tank Dell. I agree with that. But that's more of a CJ Stroud thing, more so than a, I mean, was D'Amico supposed to go over to him on the sideline and start shaking CJ?
Yeah.
And give him the slap like
you're
in the old movies?
Supposed to be consoling.
Snap out of it.
Everybody else. I think it's part and parcel of just how D'Amico handles things in general.
Yeah.
Publicly, because most of what Clint was talking about in those 2 minutes are things that were said publicly about CJ, and CJ needed to take the bull by the horns, and maybe if CJ played poorly, they need to say he played poorly. I think D'Amico has some Coughlin in him from that standpoint, that he's not going to throw guys under the bus publicly. I think it's hard for us to say whether or not he or anybody is being coddled, because we're not sitting in the meeting rooms inside the building.
Yeah,
D'Amico
can
be a very different person, and we've heard that he's a very different person.
Well, no, and I mean,
inside the building than he is at press conferences.
People tell you around the league that who runs the toughest training camps in the NFL? It's Andy Reid. Is Andy Reid a big, you know, does Andy Reid strike you as a guy that's such a old school, hard-edged coach or whatever?
No,
he sets really high standards, and he holds guys to it. And he does it in his own style, but he's not an easy coach to play for.
Yeah.
He looks big and cuddly, and he makes funny noises on insurance commercials, but he's a hard guy to play for. So,
I'm a risky dude.
So it's tough, and I'm not discounting, like, because I think I partly agree with Clint, but it's also that he is still a young quarterback on a team that had a bad offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he got his ass kicked and a bad offensive line.
There were so many things going on that offense that were just fundamentally systemically wrong. And starting with the offensive line and the way that they were handling certain situations and the way it just – none of it made sense. And I think a lot of it, just by virtue of the way they handled the coaching staff in the offseason, I do think – and I think some people are skeptical of this, or they're criticizing the Texans for saying, oh, it was all Bobby Slowick. Yeah, I've been on teams that had really bad coordinators that needed to go.
Yeah.
That needed to go because they did not know what they were doing. They sucked. I told you the story about that defensive coordinator from the past. I won't say his name because he's passed away. He was the worst defensive coordinator I've had on any level of football. He made everybody, including the assistant coaches, worse because he was a bad coordinator.
Yeah.
He needed to go.
Yep.
And then, I'm not even talking about Richard Smith. I'll say his name. He was a horrible defensive coordinator
as
well.
Did Richard Smith die?
No. I was talking about another one. I forgot. Well, I don't think Richard Smith was as bad as the other guy.
Yeah.
Richard Smith was the second worst.
Yeah.
Richard Smith was such a bad defensive coordinator that none of the defensive backs even knew exactly what their rules were in any given week. They didn't know.
That's bad.
You look at them and they come out of the meetings and their eyes are like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do this week. Sometimes the coordinator is that big of a deal.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday here. We are just a few hours away from heading out to the ballpark for a little Astros Nationals action. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long. Seth and I will be checking in on the midday and afternoon shows. And also keep it tuned to our social media, on Instagram especially. Follow our journey through Astros spring training here this week. We're having a great time down here in West Palm Beach, catching some ball. Big thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us here. Four players have been granted permission to seek trades. Should the Texans be picking up the phone when the agents of any of these four players call?
Oh.
We'll run this through the Seth Payne filter coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so we're in the roster building phase of the NFL calendar. The combine is this week. It's the prelude to the draft, of course, which is one way to supplement your roster. You got free agency. That's free agency is coming up like 2 weeks from today, I think. Something like that. Like second week, second, like March. It's 12th or something like
it. And then there's the tampering. What did Nick call it? He called it the legal tampering
the legal
period.
Tampering,
and then preceded by the illegal tampering period.
The legal tampering period.
Which is right now.
Which is the illegal
period. Illegal tampering period
now.
Is right now.
Yeah, because he cited the combine. He's like, yeah, it's amazing how many deals get done. And you're like, yeah, we were talking at the combine. Like,
yeah,
hey,
he sounded,
Nick don't play that, man.
Nick sounds like he tries to
plays it clean.
Play by the well, you know, there's one thing that they learned up there in New England. It's
play by the rules.
All right, we better really, you know, try to play by the rules.
Yeah.
And then
last
Tom
thing
Brady
I need
went,
is Nick Gate.
Yeah. I don't need combine negotiation gate.
Yeah.
Okay?
What a horrible gate that would be.
So
yeah.
Whatever conversations there might be. Oh, which by the way though, I did wonder. I hope Florio doesn't pick up on this. Somebody asked D'Amico a question about Jahmyr Gibbs, about how do you stop Jahmyr Gibbs or something. And D'Amico just said something casually like, yeah, we'd love to have a Jahmyr Gibbs. And which is like no big deal. It's no big deal at all. And yet,
Florio,
those are like the kinds of statements. Yeah, if Florio decided to like jump with it, they're like, oh, that's tampering. Because they will. The tampering. Don't get mad at me, everybody. It's dumb. Like a coach will make a simple comment like, oh, yeah, that eight-time all-pro time – eight-time All-Pro player, we'd love to have a guy like that. They'll fine you for tampering.
Paying a compliment to the guy, yeah.
So regardless.
So draft, free agency, and then trades.
I hope they trade for Jahmyr Gibbs.
That would be delightful.
I don't think Detroit's going to do it.
I don't think so either.
They might. So, yeah, let's get to these trades. Then I'll talk about Detroit.
Okay, sounds
D'Amico
good.
Mentioned
sounds
Detroit
good.
Yesterday.
Yep. Players, these are the four players who have been granted permission to seek trades that we know of.
Mm.
And the latest one is the first one on this list. This came down today. Harold Landry, edge rusher for the Tennessee Titans.
Interesting.
Has been granted permission to seek a trade. Apparently he's not having too much fun playing for the Tennessee Titans.
I think the thing about Landry is, I think, yes, he's certainly a good player to have on your team, but you're talking about an edge rusher who's a little bit undersized, too, for I think what D'Amico likes out of his edge rushers. And you're if I'm going to trade for a veteran player,
yeah.
I'm not going to trade at a position of strength. There's one thing to draft a guy where it, you know, he's cheap, you can bring him along and rotate him in and everything. So I don't think it makes sense for the Texans to go after Harold Landry.
Yeah, and that's how we're looking at these names. Yeah. Seth, we're looking at them. Should the Texans be in on any trade? If the agent for these players who's helping try to find a trade for them call the Texans, should they entertain the call? I'm with you. Harold Landry is a firm no for me. I don't even know if that's the team that Harold Landry and his group found to get a deal with, that the Titans would follow through on it, because it's in the division. And it's with Houston.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think the Titans are going to do anything that's viewed as helping the Houston Texans for a variety of reasons. This is another one. You and I, we've gotten asked about this specifically. I think you've gotten asked about it on the text page because of the position.
Yeah.
Is defensive tackle Jonathan Allen of the Washington Commanders.
I am intrigued by Jonathan Allen. This is the one thing that I worry about a little bit, is he had a nasty injury a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And he ended up he hasn't played as well the last couple years as he has historically. This is where I'm torn. Is he a guy that you look at and you think, all right, he hasn't played as well, but D'Amico's done a really good job with defensive tackles when they come in and play in this scheme.
Yeah.
He did some similar things in Washington that he would have been doing here. I'm intrigued by him. I'm nervous because he's 30 years old. I think he's turning 31 this season. And his play hasn't been as good the last couple of years as it had been before. And we've already got a bunch of old defensive linemen on this team. I think Danico Autry's still going to be around, but he's 35 years old. That I would have to say no, unless it was a really tasty deal and maybe Washington paid some of his salary or something. But I'm not interested in giving him a high draft pick.
He was a rookie in 2017.
Yeah,
he played 5 games that year, so he was hurt that year. Since then, not including last, I'll get to last season in a second. From 2018 to 2023. He missed one game in 2019. He missed one game in 2022 and one game in 2023. So he played all but 3 possible games for a 6-year period.
Yeah.
Last year he tore his pectoral muscle.
Oh, that was last year he tore his pectoral. That's right.
Yeah,
okay, yeah.
In week 8 he tore. And that's not an injury that really scares me as far as like, oh, man, like this is – you know, if it started to be like a lot, I know muscle is, it's a muscle, you know, it's quad's a muscle too. It, like a torn pectoral muscle is a very specific thing that gets surgically repaired.
Uh-huh.
And you go ahead and you play. Like it's not, it hasn't been a litany. Like, I know it's a different position, but if I had Jimmy Ward on my team, I would be planning on him playing like 6 games for me next year.
Yeah.
Because it's like 3 things a year with him.
Yeah.
So I guess the question, the age concern is a very valid one, for sure.
I think they should be interested in Jonathan Allen.
Interested in
him.
Yeah,
they should be interested in him.
$15 million salary this year.
Boy, and this is one of those things. Sometimes I really wish the draft was before free agency.
Yeah.
Because so right now you got to make a decision on whether you go with Jonathan Taylor or perhaps end up getting a defensive tackle in the draft.
Jonathan Allen, yeah.
It would have to be a really good deal. And it would have to be – the problem is he's going to want a new contract too.
Yeah. Then I'm out.
Yeah,
he's 30
yeah.
years old. I'm not giving him a
yeah,
new contract.
Yeah, I don't – it's just – it's the age and the injury combined. And
he's on a good team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's wanting to get off of Washington, which is a good team. So I would answer the call. Like Harold Landry's agent
totally
calls, I'm not
call.
Even picking up the
and
phone.
It would be one that I would hope they're having conversations about it. And then ultimately it comes down to, okay, what do they really feel about just all the reasons he's asking for a trade and everything else.
All right, the last two or two that we've actually talked – Cooper Kupp we've talked about quite a bit. Definitely answer the call.
Cooper Kupp. Yeah, it has to be a late-round draft pick, and the Rams have to pay a good chunk of his salary.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now he's not worth what his salary is.
Otherwise, wait for him
to get
cut.
And I think there's a really good chance he gets cut, and you can end up, you know, competing on the open market for him where it's probably not going to be nearly as much as what you'd have to pay if you trade for him.
Okay, these are all guys who've been granted permission to seek a trade. We did Harold Landry, Jonathan Allen, Cooper Kupp. Last one is Deebo Samuel.
Not all that interested, no.
How come?
I feel I just want a traditional wide receiver who's a wide receiver. I don't need a. I feel like this is like one of those fancy cooking utensils that you buy, but you never end up using.
There's a ton of those in this place.
Yeah, he's a mandolin super slicer. He's just something that it's cool. It's cool that he can do all that stuff out of the backfield, and he gives you all this versatility and everything. But
dude.
I just want to give me a classic trait skill set type of wide receiver to compliment Nico Collins.
You just want a toaster.
Yes, I just literally, want a toaster.
Literally and figuratively, metaphorically, you want a toaster.
We're in an Airbnb right now that has an incredible everything. It's one of the best stocked Airbnbs I've ever been in, and yet they don't have a toaster.
It's weird.
It's very strange.
It's very strange, yeah. So, yeah, just don't bring me Deebo Samuel. Bring me a toaster.
Not a toaster oven.
No. No, although I would take
like
that.
Every now and then you use it for, a tuna melt?
Toaster ovens are, those... Very underutilized.
Has there ever been anything cooked in a toaster oven that wasn't a tuna melt? I think not.
Let's talk to the fellas about this. Reggie Atatula and John Lopez. They're in studio right now. Hi, guys.
Hey, man. Toaster ovens are just too complicated. Too hard.
Yeah.
Are you for real?
They're a little hard.
They're good for other stuff. But
Yeah. Toaster.
I find myself continually just saying, why are you not a microwave?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
To the toaster oven. Yes. Yeah. How you guys doing?
Great, man. Enjoying your show.
Yeah. Not as good as you guys, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed all the various stories of your day at the ballpark.
Oh, we had a great time, man. One of the most fun times I had was listening to Seth on with the two of you yesterday.
Well, one of the things
He came in hot, man.
I didn't ask you, Seth, about you were eating a churro when you were talking to us.
Oh, I saw a churro.
Oh, you saw a churro.
Did you get one?
You were asking me some question. I was like, what is that person eating in my mind?
Did you go get one?
No, I didn't get it. He was walking past me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see churros anywhere else. So now I'm on a mission today. That's my big
Seth
thing.
Was a man of the people yesterday.
He really was.
Yeah. I ended up talking to a lot of Houstonians or former Houstonians who live in Florida now and everything. It's a great time just getting into conversations with people in that environment.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a word for that? Because my brain went to expat, but that feels a little dramatic.
People who fled Texas for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I said, why?
You're safe haven in Florida.
Yeah.
So are you guys going to get super hyped about Cam Smith today like we did today?
Oh, you're darn right.
Our question of the day, what's your most irrational sports take? Because Cam Smith gave me one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Probably something to do with Johnny Manziel for me. I always default to that. Anytime irrational means bad to me.
Hey, tell me, Sean, what's my most irrational sports take?
Your most irrational sports take?
I probably need more of them.
Yeah, maybe.
I like the idea that you're going in like, I feel like that's a too rational way of going about an irrational sports take.
I know. I need to be more balls, less brain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've often said that.
Frankly, my brain's not all that impressive. So,
but your balls here. Your balls, however.
Now, those are impressive. Now, that's impressive.
They were named the most underutilized anatomical piece in all of sport.
Hey, lists like that.
I want to know the publication that did that ranking.
Yeah.
Lopez, you would be proud of our boss, Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Cooked some amazing steaks last night.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Did an incredible job.
How did he do them? Did he reverse sear them? Did he just put them right on the grill?
Right here. That's, let Parker jump in.
And I'm a fan of the reverse sear. I've started using that
lately. Yeah. No, it was just super simple. Just a little marinade, a little salt, pepper, seasoning.
And you flipped them a lot, right?
Actually flipped them 3 times. Didn't flip them a ton.
Oh, okay.
Let them sit. Let them get a nice char. Okay.
I feel like Lopez is about to, from 2,000 miles away, say they weren't that good.
No.
Even though he wasn't here, he's going to say, well, you flipped them 3 times.
No, there's 3 different ways to do steaks. He chose one of them.
Well, do tell. What are the other two?
For the reverse sear. And then the fast and flip. You get pretty high heat, and you flip it every 30 to 45 seconds. That way you get the char, and it cooks it a lot more even.
Sure we're still talking about grilling?
Yeah, the fast and flip.
Yeah.
That was my high school career.
That's one of the things that made me quit. One of the many times I've quit Twitter, that was one of the things that flipped me over the edge, was when I made I did the dumbest thing you can do, which was ask for some tips on cooking. And I specifically said, I'm going to reverse sear a steak. I've never done it before. Any tips? And I would say 90% of the responses were, no, don't do a reverse sear. Do something else.
Yeah.
You can all go die.
It's good, especially if you're cooking multiple. Like you have 5 or 6 people there, you got to reverse sear them so they cook quicker that way.
Okay. Yeah, Seth got a bunch of people. You got the grilling equivalent of you don't know ball.
Or the well, actually. Like I specifically wanted advice on reverse searing.
You never played
the
game.
Don't do the thing you're asking about at all. Do this entirely different thing.
Right.
Why aren't you general manager?
Yeah. Exactly. And you guys, do you carry D'Amico and Nick? D'Amico was yesterday. Are you carrying Nick during the show, or just mixing in bites today?
No, we're gonna try and carry him during the show. We gave deference to our guy Seth yesterday, and we were like, ah, oh, man, we got to talk to Seth. And then we got clips after.
Oh,
and I was
yeah.
like, you know what, Casario, let's run it. So 12:40, we expect to let that thing run. Mm-hmm. Right. Nick Casario from Indy.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was going on.
No, we wanted it that way.
You should have bumped me.
We wanted it that way.
No, man, it's Seth, D'Amico, Nick. That's the pecking order.
Honestly, we probably should have, but not because you weren't great. It's because clearly it did not help the squad during that period of time. That was the woeful part of the game.
No, I basically destroyed Rinell Blanco. Yeah.
Yeah. At least they won.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came back. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, boys. Well, we look forward to listening today.